Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading local articles from the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, November 29th, 2020. I'm reading Thursday, December the 3rd, and we'll begin with the most recent articles first. San Angelo COVID-19 update. 120 coronavirus cases reported, 4 deaths, 93 hospitalized December 3rd. Tom Green County COVID-19 cases as of December 2nd. 9,621 positive cases reported. 102 new positive tests. 160 deaths. 105 from Tom Green County and 55 from other counties. 93 currently hospitalized. 1,658 active cases. Everything you need to know about San Angelo's annual tour of lights by Rosanna Frere, published December 2nd. The annual tour of lights is still scheduled in San Angelo, even though other Concho Christmas celebration events have been canceled. The tour will comply with all social distancing guidelines, since attendees will be isolated in their vehicles as they enjoy the lights. Here's everything you need to know to attend the brightest event in town this holiday season. What is the Tour of Lights? It is part of the annual Concho Christmas celebration. The tour features over 3 million lights attuned to music, spanning 2.5 miles along the Concho River. This is its 27th year, and it grows bigger and brighter every year, according to ConchoChristmasCelebration.com. The tour also includes animated scenes, such as the 12 Days of Christmas, a gingerbread house, an elaborate nativity scene, and Santa Claus. There is also a poinsettia light display along the river near the Convention and Visitors Bureau building, 418 West Avenue B. Where and when is the Tour of Lights? The self-guided Tour of Lights begins Friday, December 4th, and will run daily through Thursday, December 31st. The tour starts at 598 West 1st Street and ends at El Paseo de Santa Angela. People are invited to bike, drive, walk, or run the tour route. What times are the tours? The tour runs 6 to 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 6 p.m. to midnight Friday and Saturday. For Christmas Eve, December 24th, and Christmas Day, December 25th, the hours will be 6 to 10 p.m. Is there a fee to take the tour? There is no charge to enter, but a $5 donation is suggested per vehicle at the start of the tour. The donations go back into the program and help fund next year's tour. What Concho Christmas celebration events are canceled? The 2020 Lights of Christmas Parade and Community Tree Lighting Ceremony have been canceled. A reverse Christmas parade has been scheduled, but is separate from the Concho Christmas Celebration Organization. San Angelo man charged with intoxication manslaughter after passenger dies, by Elena Edgen, published December 3rd. A San Angelo man has been arrested Thursday after a 22-year-old man died from wreck-related injuries, according to a police news release. Around 11 p.m., Wednesday, December 2nd, police responded to a single vehicle wreck in the area of Valley View and Westway. Maurice Jared Hasty, the 20-year-old driver, was found nearby with non-incapacitating injuries and transported to a nearby hospital. Officers found a passenger, 22-year-old Kenneth Horton, near the vehicle with incapacitating injuries. He was taken to a hospital and died from his injuries. Horton was not wearing a seatbelt at the time of the crash, according to a police news release. The preliminary investigation revealed Hasty was driving his 2020 Ford F-150 pickup southeast on Valley View at a high rate of speed. The pickup clipped the mirror of a parked vehicle, and Hasty overcorrected. The pickup left the road and collided with a nearby brick structure, according to the release. Maurice Jared Hasty, 20, was arrested on suspicion of intoxication manslaughter with a vehicle. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $25,000 bond as of 9:15 a.m. Thursday. This is an ongoing investigation, according to the release. This is the second fatal crash inside city limits in recent days. On November 25th, Cheyenne Miller, 26, was killed when her 1999 Ford Explorer Sport crashed on Howard Street when Miller lost control and overcorrected. She was not wearing a seatbelt at the time of the crash and was the only person in the vehicle, police said. Affidavit states, San Angelo man shot another man at Sterling City Convenience Store, by Elena Edgen, published December 3rd. A San Angelo man was arrested Wednesday after a man was shot in the face in Sterling County, according to an affidavit of probable cause released Thursday. On December 2, 2020, law enforcement responded to a report of an aggressive man at a Tres Amigos convenience store in the 900 block of 4th Street in Sterling City. Erie County Dispatch alerted law enforcement the man had a weapon, according to the affidavit. Investigators learned a man had shot another man in the face, records state. The injured man was transported to Shannon Medical Center downtown for treatment. He was in stable condition as of Thursday morning. Andrew J. Stone, 38, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center with no bond listed as of 10:15 a.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Affidavit states San Angelo man filmed disciplining child, woman reports video to police, by Elena Edgen, published December 2nd. A San Angelo man was arrested and released after a child was assaulted, according to an arrest affidavit. On November 19th, police met with a woman who showed them video of a man assaulting a child younger than 14 years old in the 4000 block of Benficklin Road, records state. The video reportedly showed a man yelling and cursing at the child, hitting their head and pulling their finger back. During an interview, the child told officers they put their hand in their infant sibling's face, which upset the man. The woman told officers she heard yelling while she was in the restroom. When she came out, she asked the man what happened, and he said he had disciplined the child for putting their hand in the infant's face, records state. She watched the surveillance video and confronted the man about the assault. He denied hitting the child, and she showed him the video, according to the affidavit. Jonathan Oladel Ashunkenton, 29, was arrested November 20th on suspicion of injury to a child, reckless bodily injury. The charge was changed to intentional injury, according to the arrest affidavit. This is a state jail felony punishable by up to 2 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. He was released from Tom Green County Jail on November 22nd on a $20,000 bond, according to online jail records. Downtown San Angelo coffee shop, Pizzeria Stango's Building for Sale, by Rosanna Frere, published December 2nd. A downtown San Angelo coffee shop and pizzeria building is for sale. Stango's Coffee Shop at 221 South Chadron Street has been in business for 8 years. San Angelo Real Estate had the 1969 building listed for sale Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. If you're looking for a turnkey business with rental opportunities, look no further. This is the investment for you, the real estate website states. The only thing better than this deal is the pizza. The 4,210 square foot building has a full bar, loaded commercial kitchen, and loft area. In the back is a two-story, one-bed, one-and-a-half-bath apartment with all the amenities, with an upstairs loft bedroom, bathroom, and two rented covered parking spots. Stango's Coffee Shop has not publicly announced its closing. Earlier this year, Steve Stango, the coffee shop's namesake owner, shelved plans to open an Italian restaurant downtown. Stango had purchased property at 208 South Oak Street in June 2019 with plans to open Stango's Fine Italian Dining. But on April 25th, with the coronavirus pandemic's closure 6 weeks in, along with other challenges, Stango pulled the plug on the project. I believe there are reasons for why things happen, and I am just going to stay focused on keeping Stango's coffee shop open, which is going to be tough. We all are going to be having it tough, a Facebook post stated. how COVID-19 shutdowns work in Texas and when San Angelo could be impacted, by John Tufts, published December 2nd. A recent surge of COVID-19 is leading to more hospitalizations for the virus in the Concho Valley that could trigger a shutdown of some local businesses in the near future. On Saturday, November 28th, Tom Green County exceeded 15% hospitalization rate for the coronavirus, a threshold state officials use to determine if Texas businesses can operate at normal or reduced occupancy. The area has exceeded that 15% threshold consecutively for 5 days, November 28th through December 2nd, according to state data. While local officials, including Tom Green County Judge Steve Floyd and San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter, have publicly maintained that business restrictions imposed by the state would occur after the area reached a 7-day rolling average of hospitalizations at 15% or higher, the state said it's based on 7 consecutive days. When a region's hospital capacity is comprised of 15% or more COVID-19 patients for 7 days in a row, there are protocols in place to automatically close bars and ratchet back openings to 50% occupancy, said Renee Ease, a spokesman for Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Floyd said he was operating on information from Dr. Rachel Sohn, who oversees the health authorities in the region, including Dr. James Bretas. Floyd confirmed Wednesday to the Standard Times that Sohn misspoke during previous conversations with local officials, leading to the confusion. COVID-19 keeps climbing, but statewide shutdown unlikely. While positive cases of COVID-19 continue to remain high locally, it doesn't necessarily mean the operations in San Angelo will come to a screeching halt. San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter issued a statement Tuesday, reminding residents the odds of a statewide shutdown were low. Under the governor's current executive orders, a shutdown is not allowed unless it is enacted by the governor, and he himself has said recently that he will not shut down Texas again, Gunter stated. State officials says high COVID hospitalizations for 7 days in a row will trigger closings. What could trigger some San Angelo businesses to close or be impacted by reduced occupancy levels depends on local hospital patients who are treated for COVID-19 and the number of beds available to treat them. In October, Governor Greg Abbott issued Executive Order GA-32 to reopen some Texas businesses to 75% capacity, as well as to allow elective surgeries in certain counties. As part of those orders, however, counties in trauma service areas with high COVID-19 hospitalizations are excluded, according to the Texas Health and Human Services Department. Areas with high hospitalizations means any trauma service area that has had 7 consecutive days in which the number of COVID-19 hospitalized patients as a percentage of total hospital capacity exceeds 15%, according to Abbott's executive order. San Angelo Trauma Service Area, known as Region K or Concho Valley RAC, includes the following counties: Koch, Concho, Crockett, Erion, Kimball, Mason, McCulloch, Menard, Reagan, Runnels, Schleicher, Sterling, Sutton, and Tom Green. On Saturday, November 28th, the COVID-19 hospitalization rate was at 16.5%, then 16.08% Sunday, 17.19% Monday, and 16.28% Tuesday, according to state health data. What happens when our COVID-19 hospitalizations reach or exceed 15%? If our region continues to maintain or exceed the 15% threshold, the changes that follow will be implemented by the state and the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, a City of San Angelo news release stated. The TABC will require that bars that were opened per executive order to close, and businesses with occupancy rates that were increased to 75% will be reduced back to 50%. The occupancy reduction will primarily impact restaurants, libraries, event centers, and other businesses not listed under the order's guidance or covered by other exemptions. A region can begin the process of reopening once they have stayed below that 15% COVID-19 patient threshold for 7 days in a row, Ease said. State officials says shutdowns and reducing occupancy rates are working in El Paso. Ease said closing some bars and reducing occupancy levels can make a difference in how COVID-19 impacts a community. We've seen this work, as evidenced by the recent efforts in El Paso, Ease said. Ease said El Paso's coronavirus positive tests reached 1,920 on November 5th, but had dropped to 319 by Tuesday. Hospitalizations also decreased from 1,108 to 818 during that same time frame. That's a 26% reduction in hospitalizations and an 83% reduction in new cases in just a few short weeks, proving once again that these mitigation protocols work, but only if they are enforced, E said. Local officials and law enforcement are encouraged and empowered to oversee and enforce existing protocols to help mitigate the virus, such as the mask mandate and occupancy limits under law. In a media briefing last month, Floyd said Vredis can make a determination if local businesses or events are ignoring social distancing and other health measures and impose restrictions that could lead to their closure. If we get past the 15% threshold and the governor says we need to start closing things down, I will hate it, but I will do it, Vredis said. Affidavit states San Angelo man invites teen to games at motel, sexually assaults them, by Elena Edgen, published December 2nd. A San Angelo man has been arrested Tuesday after a child, 16, was forced into a restroom and sexually assaulted, according to an arrest affidavit released Wednesday. On Sunday, November 29th, police responded to a child's report of a sexual assault. The child, 16, stated they had been sexually assaulted at a motel room in the 300 block of North Bryant Boulevard on Saturday, records state. A man invited the teen to his motel room for card and board games and drinks with his friends. After a few games and drinks, the man forced the child into the restroom and began making sexual advances, according to the affidavit. He then pulled the teen onto the floor and sexually assaulted them. During an interview with police, the man said he was renting the room to have drinks and play games with friends, including the teen. He did not deny sexual contact, records state. He did tell officers he had had a lot to drink and didn't remember, but whatever happened was not forced, according to the affidavit. Adam Price, 29, was arrested Tuesday on suspicion of sexual assault of a child. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $55,000 bond as of 11 a.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. Grieving San Angelo mother searches for lost necklace, by Rosanna Frere, published December 1st. I just want it back. It doesn't mean anything to anyone else but me. It means a great deal to me, Kat Feuerstein said slowly, with tears in her eyes. 3 years ago, Feuerstein was gifted a necklace with a picture of her late daughter, Tasia Vanderberg, who died in November 2017 at the age of 30. I love you to the moon and back, the necklace read, a saying her daughter frequently told loved ones. On November 17, 2020, Feuerstein put on her necklace, as she does every morning. Later that night, she noticed it wasn't around her neck anymore. After searching her house and vehicle, then reflecting on her day, she realized the only place she visited was the Walmart neighborhood market at 1852 Sherwood Way. Feuerstein said she has walked around Walmart and the parking lot about 30 times looking for her jewelry since it was not turned into the lost and found. Maybe someone has it but doesn't know how to find the owner, she said. Maybe they picked it up and kept it. Hopefully they will see how much it means to me and return it. Turn it in to the police or the Standard Times and they can get it to me. Someone has to know where it is. Feuerstein bought a similar necklace, but it doesn't have the sentiment the original necklace had. It's just not the same, she said. I'm so torn up about losing it. It's not just a necklace. Feuerstein also has a tattoo of her daughter's favorite flower, the stargazer lily, and her name on her left forearm. Some people tell me the tattoo is upside down, she said. Nope, I put it this way because it's for me to look at, smile, and remember her. Just next to her tattoo, she wears a bracelet engraved with Tasia's name, filled with her ashes. Vanderberg left behind two daughters, Alicia, 15, and Riley, 8, along with her husband, David. It's hard to explain how difficult life gets after you lose someone so important, he said. It's not difficult because the hardships of everyday life, with school and care for our girls. It's difficult because you had someone there for them that loved them as much as you do. Now they can no longer turn to that person for the love they desire so much. If you believe you found the necklace, please email news@gosanangelo.com. Indictment. San Angelo man, sexually assaulted child, had gun on high school campus. By Elena Edgen, published December 1st. A San Angelo man has been indicted on 3 charges, stemming from a child's outcry of sexual abuse, according to indictments released Monday. On September 18, 2020, police investigated a child sexual assault. The child, 14, reported a man had picked them up from their residence that day and took her to an unknown location on Kistler Street, according to the arrest affidavit. The man sexually assaulted the girl before taking her to a motel in the 1100 block of North Chadburn Street, where the assaults continued. The child made an outcry to a woman who informed police. Further investigation also revealed the man, who had a prior conviction for unauthorized use of a vehicle in 2019, had a gun. During an interview with police, he admitted to having the gun at Central High School when an officer working as school security attempted to speak with him, records stated. Nathaniel Aaron Molina, 20, was arrested on suspicion of sexual assault of a child, unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, and unlawful carrying of a weapon in a prohibited place. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of an $80,000 bond as of 4:45 p.m. Monday, according to online jail records. 2 indictments were filed on these charges. The sexual assault is a second-degree felony punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. The weapon charges are third-degree felonies punishable by up to 10 years. A court date has not been scheduled in these cases as of 4:45 p.m. Monday, according to online court records. A lifetime of experiences. World War II pilot from Ballinger now fighting COVID-19. Joe Freeman has flown over the beaches of Normandy and the crops of West Texas during his 99 years. By Paul Harris, published December 1st. Ballinger. Joe Freeman endured the Great Depression through his childhood and flew 109 combat missions in Western Europe before his 23rd birthday. Now at 99 years old, the Ballinger resident faces a new fight after he was recently hospitalized due to COVID-19. Freeman is among the estimated 325,000 veterans still alive, about 2%, of the 16 million Americans who served in World War II, according to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. His son-in-law, David Cowart, said the family received an encouraging update Tuesday on Freeman's condition. They had just diagnosed him Monday as positive, so we're very early on, and his age will certainly be a huge factor in this, Cowart said. We're just going to have to take it day by day. Freeman has spent nearly all of his life in West Texas. He grew up in Fort McCabot and attended school in Menard before graduating from San Angelo High School in 1937. 4 years later, his life, like so many others, was forever changed when he learned of the bombing of Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. It's what motivated Freeman to join the fight in World War II. He told me he was mad as hell when he heard it on the radio, Cowart said. The next day, he went down and enlisted. Before he flew a single mission, he met his future wife, Elizabeth Kellum, while stationed in Waycross, Georgia. They were married shortly after he returned home from the war, and they enjoyed 59 years of marriage before she died October 30th, 2004. Freeman had to survive some close calls in Europe to make it back home. He said he could smell gunpowder from a German bullet that was lodged between his engine and his cockpit. He still has the bullet. Another time, he damaged his own plane from dropping a bomb at too low an altitude. He had two wingmen with his flight, and they both bombed and missed the bridge. Well, he was determined they weren't leaving there with that bridge intact, Cowart said. So he flew up to altitude, and he had his nose straight on that bridge, and he stayed on it until he couldn't miss and dropped that bomb. He said, "Shrapnel came all the way up through my airplane and canopy from my own bomb, but I destroyed that damn bridge." He went back and landed, and luckily it didn't destroy any critical components. But the next morning, in formation, the squadron leader walked up to him and said, "Don't get me wrong, I like hotshot pilots, but I've got plenty of hotshot pilots. I don't have many airplanes. Don't do that again." Freeman also had an almost unfathomable perspective from high in the sky on D-Day, June 6, 1944, when more than 150,000 troops landed on five beaches in Normandy, France. "On D-Day morning, we saddled up at daylight and headed for France. I'll never see another sight like that," Freeman said in a 2011 interview with Texas Woman's University. Looking back towards England from France, "There's four rows of boats coming, which were mostly those landing craft full of soldiers, you know, and they went all the way back to England and then up around the west coast of England. I didn't know there was that many boats in the world." The D-Day invasion helped turn the tide of the war for the Allies, but the aftermath was unimaginable, Freeman recalled. On his next-to-last mission, returning over Omaha Beach, he was flying low coming back. And he said the ocean surf water was absolutely reddish pink from the blood, Cowart said. Bodies were lined up as far as he could see, just laid side by side down on the beach to be taken off. He said he had never seen so many dead soldiers before or since. Grateful to have survived the war, Freeman returned home with many years ahead of him. He went into business with an uncle and began building farm terraces in Tom Green, Runnels, and Concho counties. His flying experience came back into play when Dow Chemical began manufacturing brush control products that had to be provided aerially. "Being a fighter pilot, he jumped on that," Cowart said. "He bought his first airplane and started a business, and it was extremely successful. He sprayed for ranchers from Del Rio to Sterling City, and out to Midland and Odessa. He did some crop dusting in the early years, and he was spraying cotton around El Dorado, San Angelo, and of course, Ballinger. So he built a business, and I know of at least three other pilots he helped train and establish their own air spraying business, and so he was very generous with his knowledge and time." Freeman and his wife leased the Ballinger Municipal Airport to use as their home base. They had three children, Carol, Jimmy, and Linda. In the 1970s, Freeman ventured into ranching. He even served as the director of the American Rambouillet Sheep Breeders Association. "If you want to pick any industry where you'll meet some of the best people, the sheep industry has more than its share of good people in it," Freeman said in an article published by Ranch and Rural Living in September 1998. "I guess they've had to overcome so many obstacles that it just built character for them." Cowart said he believes Freeman's upbringing in rural West Texas during the Depression helped build that same kind of character. "I've heard him speak of working on ranches and riding horses and races to win money. All kinds of neat things they did to survive," Cowart said. "But that's the background he came from. They buckled down and did what they had to do. And I always thought that was an interesting aspect of his character. He's always been, to me, the epitome of the old West Texas spirit. I don't need anybody to do anything for me. I'll make my own decisions, and I'll make my way." And he did that very successfully. There are a few photographs accompanying this story that I would like to describe as well as I am able to. The first photo is a portrait, a picture that was taken in his military uniform. It looks like an official military picture, and he is wearing his dress uniform. Caption accompanying photograph: Joe Freeman, a 99-year-old World War II veteran who lives in Ballinger, was 20 years old when he enlisted in the U.S. Air Force. Photo credit, contributed photo. The next credit is of Joe Freeman as an older man. And again, it says, Joe Freeman, 99, is a World War II veteran who lives in Ballinger. Photo credit, contributed photo. And then we have another picture of a man and a woman, both very, very handsome couple. And on the left is the woman who has brunette hair and dark eyes, and she's wearing, looks like a dark colored dress with white buttons down it. And then we see the man to the right side of the photo, and he's wearing his military uniform. It looks like they're maybe sitting at a table at a restaurant because there's a small glass that's sitting on the table. The caption accompanying photograph: Joe and Liz Freeman are pictured here in April 1945. Photo credit, contributed photo. The next photograph is a picture of six men who are in military uniforms, and it looks like that they are standing outside. It's an area with a lot of trees behind them. Caption accompanying photograph: Joe Freeman, top right, is pictured with other pilots who flew during World War II. Photo credit, contributed photo. And finally, the last photograph, again, of a man and the same woman. The woman, again, is on the left side with her dark hair, dark eyes. She looks like she's wearing some round white earrings, and she's wearing something in white, either a white blouse or a white dress. We see them only from waist high. To the right of her is a man, again, dressed in a military uniform, holding a cigarette. Looks like there may be a coffee cup that is just barely appearing in the photo. Caption accompanying photograph: Newlyweds Joe and Liz Freeman are pictured on their honeymoon in Miami in May 1945. Photo credit, contributed photo. San Angelo Baker wins $10,000 in Food Network Cookie Baking Championship, by Rosanna Frere, published December 1st. A San Angelo Baker was featured on Food Network's Christmas Cookie Challenge and took home the grand prize of $10,000. Taisha Ligon began her business Cookie Joy on June 30th, 2017 in San Angelo after spending over 20 years in the dental field. I spent 22 years total in dentistry. Definitely a different career path than cookies, she said. The baker competed in Season 4, Episode 2 of the Cookie Challenge, which aired Monday, November 30th, 2020. I thought I would be very nervous, but it was so much fun, Ligon said. That kitchen was beautiful and stocked with everything a baker could ever want, so it was really a dream to bake in such an amazing kitchen. Ligon said she was invited to apply to the show's competition by a Food Network producer who found her on Instagram. I applied, got through a pretty intense audition process, and was offered the opportunity to compete, she said. She battled against four other bakers making tie-dye cookies in round one. Two were eliminated after the first round, leaving Ligon and two other bakers making cookie imposter platters. Seeing is believing as they decorate cookies that look just like savory holiday appetizers, according to Food Network. To cement the illusion, they have to use classic crudité ingredients like carrots, broccoli, and cherry tomatoes in their cookie displays. Ligon created a spread of imitation guacamole and tortilla chips, pigs in a blanket, and cheese and crackers. You can't be from Texas and not have an appetizer platter without chips and dip, she said on the show. Guest judge Jazine Prado joined host Ree Drummond and Eddie Jackson, picking one baker to win the $10,000 prize, Ligon. I can't even believe this is real life, she said. I started this business with so much faith that it would be successful, but so much fear of the unknown. Getting to not only go on the show, but to win is really a sort of validation that chasing a dream was a pretty good idea. Ligon said her business would not be where it is today without her local customers. "This community has been incredibly supportive of my business," she said. "I'm so appreciative of the people of San Angelo." 350 late veterans to be honored during Wreaths Across America ceremony in San Angelo. By Rosanna Frere, published December 1st. Late veterans buried at Belvedere Memorial Park will be honored during Wreaths Across America ceremony in San Angelo. Nearly 350 service members buried at the cemetery at 3504 Arden Road will have live balsam wreaths placed on their graves. Members of the San Angelo Composite Squadron and members from Goodfellow Air Force Base will begin laying wreaths at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 19th. Masks and social distancing are a requirement for the ceremony and will be limited to 100 people for safety due to the coronavirus. "We appreciate everyone that donated a wreath for these veterans to honor their service to our country," a news release stated. Those interested in volunteering are encouraged to register at wreathsacrossamerica.org. "It's important that during challenging times, we all take a moment to remember those who have met and overcome challenges and show unity in our American spirit while we work together in an effort to march forward in the face of what seems to be insurmountable odds," Karen Worcester, executive director of Wreaths Across America, said. Indictments. San Angelo child attempted to stop man hurting mother gets choked. By Elena Egan, published December 1st. A San Angelo man previously convicted for domestic violence has been indicted after a child was shoved against a wall and choked, according to an indictment released Monday. On September 26, 2020, police responded to an unknown problem in the 2700 block of Bowie Street. A child, 13, told officers a man and their mother were in a physical fight. The child verbally intervened and the man turned on the child, according to an arrest affidavit. He placed his hand around the child's throat, pushed them against the wall, and applied pressure to their throat, restricting their ability to breathe, records state. A second child, 12, told officers they witnessed the assault. Fabian Delgado, 32, was arrested on suspicion of assault causes bodily injury, family violence, injury to a child with intentional bodily injury, assault on a family or household member with a prior conviction, and terroristic threat of family or household. An indictment charged him with injury to a child with intentional bodily injury and assault on a family or household member with a prior conviction. The charges list assaults on the child and a woman. Both charges have been enhanced to a habitual offender status. The enhancements are due to Delgado's prior convictions for possession of methamphetamine in 2015 and aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury in 2012. Delgado was also convicted of misdemeanor assault of a family member in 2008. He remained in Tom Green County Jail in lieu of a $107,500 bond as of 5 p.m. Monday, according to online jail records. A court date has not been set as of 5 p.m. Monday, according to online court records. Indictment. San Angelo man inappropriately touched child three times. By Elena Edgen. Originally published September 3rd. A San Angelo man has been indicted after a child made two outcries of sexual contact, according to an indictment released Monday. The indictment charged Victor Hugo Fierros, 48, with two counts of indecency with a child by sexual contact. These charges are second-degree felonies, punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Fierros was released from Tom Green County Detention Center on September 4th on a $45,000 bond, according to online jail records. A court date has not been scheduled as of 10 a.m. Monday, according to online court records. Indictment. Trail of blood from hospital leads to one arrest. Woman charged in assault. By Elena Edgen, originally published September 18th, published December 1st. Update. A San Angelo suspect has been indicted after a woman left a trail of blood while fleeing an assault, according to an indictment released Monday. The indictment charged Deborah Anna Ramirez, 26, with aggravated assault with serious bodily injury. This is a second-degree felony punishable by up to 20 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. She remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $60,000 bond as of 9:15 a.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. A court date has not been scheduled as of 9:15 a.m. Tuesday, according to online court records. New year, new market. Here's what San Angelo real estate professionals predict for 2021. By Elena Edgen, published November 30th. After a year of swift change, San Angelo real estate professionals look forward to a successful 2021 season. When comparing 2020 to 2019, the real estate business in San Angelo has seen an increase in sales and home prices, but a decline in homes on the market. Ryan Newland, a realtor with ERA Newland & Company, compared the numbers from 2019 and 2020. More homes sold for higher prices around San Angelo in 2020. Real estate statistics for the San Angelo area. 2020 sales as of November 18th, 1,972 for $411 million. The 2019 total sales, 1,967 for $399 million. Average price in 2020 as of November 18th, $216,000. Average price in 2019, $203,000. Average days on market in 2020, 83. Average days on market in 2019, 86. We started out really well, started to tail off, and it's gone crazy since then, Newland said. While sales have increased, the amount of homes on the market has decreased due to a concerning amount. As of November 18th, there were 184 homes for sale with an average price of $356,000, according to Newland. We have an extremely low inventory, Newland said. I hope we'll see more homes coming on the market. I thought all year the reason we had a low number was because people weren't sure what to expect with everything going on. Another possible factor, which could roll into 2021, is the price of lumber, which has roughly tripled with the increased demand in 2020. It's affecting the builders, and it's going to make that inventory even lower, Newland said. A builder who had his costs down, he now has to add $15,000 more in lumber alone. Hopefully, we should see those prices come down again. As for 2021 expectations, local experts are hopeful and offered some advice to potential buyers and sellers. What to expect for the 2021 year and how to prepare. While prices could change on homes, Newland predicted rents will continue to increase. I don't think they are going to go down, Newland said. Tom Green County changed how they taxed rentals, which has increased prices for owners. A low down payment program could be cheaper than rent. Buying is much cheaper still. During 2020, San Angelo saw low interest rates, around 3%. Local experts are hopeful that will continue into the new year. There's no crystal ball to confirm, but I'm hopeful they will stay low, said Brittany Taylor, branch manager for San Angelo's Gateway Mortgage. It's a great time to buy and a great time to sell. Tyler Mateo, a realtor with Keller Williams Realty, also expects that rates will stay low and hopes to double her sales from 2020. It's a great time for sellers to make money on their property, Mateo said. Potential buyers and sellers should keep an eye on interest rates going into the new year. If interest rates stay low, buyers could get better deals on bigger homes, more options, and have more flexibility in what they can buy. For sellers, low interest rates give them competitive offers from more buyers. The low rates also allow for better refinancing options. Newland also urged people to use a local lender for a mortgage. Using a local lender gives you a better shot to get that dream house, he said. If you're a seller and looking at different offers, it's better to have a local lender. Mateo also suggested speaking with the lender before starting the process to buy a home. Homes go so quick, so buyers will want to be prepared to move fast when a property they love becomes available. People can also prepare to buy or sell by doing these things. Get pre-approved. Save money. Hold off on buying big items until after buying a home. Sellers could hire an inspector to find minor fixes and fix them before putting a home on the market. Reach out to a realtor. Another thing people can do is go to a mortgage company for a free assessment, where they can also learn about programs that could help them afford a home. There are programs for first-time home buyers where no down payment is required. San Angelo Delivery Business takes first place in City Business Competition by Elena Edgen, published November 27th. Three San Angelo businesses won thousands of dollars in the San Angelo Business Plan Competition, according to a city news release. Out of 28 business entries, a San Angelo delivery service, a limestone company, and a fire safety business won the top three spots. Businesses had to present a plan to reflect the vision of a market opportunity and serve as a blueprint for developing the proposed business, according to the release. San Angelo To Go, a food delivery company, took first place and won $40,000. The business will use the prize to help expand their services to on-demand and full-service deliveries. The expansion will include retail, convenience, pharmaceutical, and other small businesses that do not have a physical location or online presence. Texas Australia Rock Company, which reconstitutes limestone product for construction projects, earned the second spot and $20,000. The company, which is ran by a father, a son, and Australian business partner, opened around August 2020. Netco Fire and Safety, formerly Texas Fire Extinguisher and Services, earned the third spot and $10,000. Shannon Kendall and Justin Doss, the new owners, will be inspecting, servicing, and selling portable fire extinguishers. With the funds, they also plan to expand their services to kitchen hood systems. These three businesses also received in-kind rewards and could be eligible to apply to the COSADC's Business Factory Incubator Program. 1 year later, San Angelo Restaurant announces reopening with new feel. Peasant Village reopening a year after closure. By Elena Edgen, published November 25th. Update: the opening date has been pushed to Tuesday, December 8th, according to Jason Helfer, chef and owner. Original story. A San Angelo restaurant announced its reopening Wednesday, just over a year after a fatal crash and arrest shuttered the business. As the temperatures rose to a cool mid-70s on Wednesday, November 25th, 2020, the sounds of remodeling rang through Peasant Village, 23 South Park Street. Jason Helfer, chef and owner of the restaurant, and PV Deli worked beside the crew as they prepared for next week's reopening on Friday, December 4th. "We're going to reopen with a different feel, vision, and a better understanding of the new norm," Helfer said. "Before the wreck, it was known just as a fine dining anniversary or birthday spot." Helfer's vision for the reopening is a classy yet relaxing place where anyone can come in. There will be Prohibition-style cocktails with a Prohibition theme. One new element, playing on the Prohibition theme, includes a speakeasy pickup window on the side of the restaurant underneath a magnolia tree. People will need to keep up with Peasant Village on social media to discover the secret knock or tap. "It's going to be a swanky vibe," he said. "We're still excited to keep having that traditional life of anniversaries and parties. We're just adding new things here for the new norm people have been wanting." The rooms have also been changed so people could hold gatherings with up to 25 people. Internet will also be available, allowing for meetings across rooms or working while eating. "Just come in and have an open mind and a great appetite. You're still going to get the feel of the present village, but I'm creating new memories, all new foods and atmosphere inside and out. I'm excited about bringing the experience back to San Angelo," Helfer said. Helfer also plans to reopen the neighboring South Park pub in 2021. The restaurant's hours will start out at 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and 6 to 9 p.m. for Tuesday through Saturday. Reservations are encouraged but not required. The path to reopening. On November 16, 2019, police rushed to Peasant Village, where a Dodge Charger had rolled over and left a passenger dead. The driver, the passenger's brother, was found nearby and arrested on suspicion of intoxication manslaughter with a vehicle. The crash, which hit the building but caused no structural damage, led to Peasant Village closing. It also left an impression on Helfer, who stopped drinking. "His death saved my life," Helfer said. "It showed me what I have. It showed me what I was losing. I quit drinking. I don't party anymore. I changed my life because of that wreck." It took several months for insurance and inspections to finish, and then COVID-19 hit. In September, the remodeling began. A year into Peasant Village's Dallas location, which opened in 2019, tornadoes hit the area in May 2020. Combined with the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, it led to the closing of the Dallas Peasant Village. "It was a sad, sad day, but there was nothing we could do," he said. "We tried, but the property owners asked us if we wanted out of our lease because there was nothing there anymore. It was desolate." Though it was difficult, Helfer also learned from other Dallas restaurants, which inspired the overall remodeling of Peasant Village. In some restaurants, he found a menu with range from fine steak to wings. They had entrees that were in the $30 range and some in the $10 range, he said. "If I felt like I wanted to dress up that night, I could, and I could still go in dressed down. That's what I'm doing here." And now here's the weekly column from Allison Watkins. Important yard work can still be done in December. It may seem like December is time to halt the yard work, but for those that want to stay productive and or just enjoy the cooler weather, there are plenty of things to do for the lawn and garden in the winter. Here are a few ideas of things to consider adding to the landscape to-do list during the colder months. First, stay on top of pests. Dormant oil is an insect control option that can only be used in the dormant winter season. If applied correctly, it can provide good control of insect pests that are overwintering on plants and is a good choice for controlling scale insects. Redbud trees are particularly susceptible to scale and would likely benefit from a dormant oil application this winter. Keep cool season weeds managed in the lawn to keep the lawn healthy and help it come back strong in the spring. Take advantage of cooler weather to get done some of the more labor-intensive chores that are more difficult in the summer heat, such as replenishing mulch in beds and improving soil by tilling in compost. A 3 to 4 inch deep layer of mulch does a lot of good for plants and is particularly important in the winter for tender perennials, such as lantana, yellow bells, and pride of Barbados. Brighten up the curb appeal of the home by planting bright annual color, like pansies, snapdragons, and stock. Grow cool season food crops, like spinach, kale, and beets. Don't fertilize the lawn or perennials that are going dormant, but do keep fertilizing cool season flowers and vegetables to keep them productive and vigorous. Take a look through seed catalogs and order seeds for next spring. February is a good time to start many seeds indoors for later spring planting. Major pruning of shade trees can be done in the winter, and plants can also be moved in the dormant season. If a volunteer tree popped up somewhere without enough room to grow and needs to be moved, or if a shrub or perennial just needs a new location, the best chance for successful moving is during the winter. The smaller the plant, the easier it is to move, so do it when plants are young. The winter season is the only opportunity to plant bare root trees, so if you'd like to add a fruit tree or pecan tree, now is a good time to get some at an inexpensive price. Make a plan and plant carefully. Bare root plants are tricky to get established well. Purchase freshly dug plants. Soak the roots in a bucket before planting and plant right away. Don't let them sit around for days, allowing the roots to dry up. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.